honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with John Hosey of Woodinville, Washington. And I want to thank one of our listeners, a Navy veteran by the name of Bear Campbell, for introducing me to Mr. Hosey, who told us how he lied about his age to get into the Army at 16, met his wife of 66 years now on a bus to Seattle getting ready to ship out for Korea, and spent 13 months enduring everything the weather, the North Koreans, and the Chinese could throw at him.
Now, there was one point that I was not involved with, but my unit was. The 187th RCT was supposed to stop what they called a freedom train going north from South Korea to north with a load of prisoners on board. And they were supposed to stop the train and take our prisoners off of it. And from what I understood, this was the time that I was possibly driving truck, which might have been a blessing for me. I don't know. But the Air Force had dropped them 10 miles off of their drop zone. And by the time they got to the tunnel and everything, they found that the train had already come through the tunnel, stopped in the tunnel, took a bunch of our prisoners off, and executed them with their hands tied behind their back and everything. And they found alive people underneath the dead people. They had crawled underneath the dead in order to survive being shot. They had been wounded, but they survived because they hadn't had what we call a death blow to them. But that story is on the RCT's record. And they don't talk too much about it because of the brutality of it, I think. But our people were alongside the track in stacks of dead body where the Chinese and North Koreans had just taken them and executed them and threw them in a pile. That kind of thing makes you, you know, a little bit madder and makes you want to end whatever's going on. And I think that helped a lot of the RCT, 187th troops. I think that helped us survive a lot whenever we knew about that.
Because you were motivated to defeat an enemy that would behave so inhumanely?
Yeah, because as a paratrooper unit, you had a hard time trying to keep prisoners. And I know that the 187th executed a few prisoners because we could not protect our own and take care of prisoners. But it was have to situations. Most of everybody that I know was killed with a weapon of some sort in their hand. But then I came up here, and after we were married, my wife was working for a insurance guy who was a captain in the Washington State National Guard. And Sandy had told him my story, and he came to me one day and he says, "John, join my National Guard unit and I'll get your rank back within 90 days. And I said, "Sid, I don't think you can do that." And he says, "You join my unit and I'll show you." I said, "I don't want nothing to do with the Army." But between Sandy and him, they talked me into joining the Washington State National Guard. And true to his word, 90 days, I was a sergeant. Then I had an opportunity. The captain came to me and he says, "Hey, John, Colonel Bear wants you to go to OCS. And I said, "Get off of my back. I don't want to be an officer." He says, "No, really. He wants you to go to OCS. He wants to talk to you." He says, "Now, when you go up, be nice." He knew me pretty well. So I went and reported to the colonel, and he told me, he says, "How would you like to go to OCS and become an officer?" I said, "I wouldn't." And He says, why not? I said, I didn't intend on staying in the Army. I don't really, you know, want to be an officer. Right. He says, I'd like for you to go to OCS. Hmm. No, sir, I'd prefer not. He says, well, John, I'm going to give you two options. Go to OCS or out of the National Guard. I think he was teasing about out of the National Guard, but I don't know. So I agreed to go to OCS. That's how I become an officer. I got my commission in 59. And then the Washington State took over these missile bases here in Washington. And one of them was, I guess, only us that was in the unit knew about it. I ran the one. It's now Bothell, but it was called Kenmore. And then I got recalled into the service in 61. And at that time, I was a fireman for Seattle, firefighter. My last fire was fighting the public market fire that caught on fire in 61. Every time I see a picture of it, I think to myself, a group of us firefighters made that possible that the market is still there.
This is the famous Pike's Place Market?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. That's it. And when I was recalled on active duty, I was supposed to go to special weapons school. But once I got to Fort Bliss, Texas, the general decided that he wanted me to become his honor guard commander. I told him I didn't want to be his honor guard commander, and you don't talk that way to a general.
Nope.
But that made me want to get away from Fort Bliss. And I tried to get into the special forces. I tried to get into the airborne. I tried everything. Then one day I saw a sign that said, the Army's looking for a few pilots. Well, that clicked in my mind because my dad had told me at about 5 or 6 years old, I told my dad I wanted to be a pilot. And he says, J.D., if you ever become a pilot, I'll buy you an airplane. Huh. Well, he was at the airfield the day that I soloed. But anyway, I saw this sign, and I said, I'm going to apply for that. So I put in the paperwork, and I came home, and I told Sandy that I'd applied for flight school. She says, if you'd gone to school, college, the way I tried to get you to, but you think you can compete with these college kids? I said, if they can do it, I can do it. So 3 months, I got orders to go to Fort Rooker, Alabama, to go to flight school. And the only problem I had was with weather. I flunked one weather exam. Mm. And other than that, I made it through flight school. And out of 42 of us pilots, 40 of them went to Vietnam and 2 of us went to France. I was one of the lucky ones that I got to go to France. So I flew otters over in France for 3 years. Then I got orders for Vietnam. I went over to Vietnam, and I arrived in the country supposedly as a fixed-wing otter pilot. In the meantime, I had been cross-trained in helicopters over in Germany. I had helicopter pilot on my records. When I reported into Nha Trang to the otter company, the captain that was on duty, the duty officer, he says, don't even unpack. He says, you're going up to Da Nang. And I said, what? He says, you're going to either Da Nang or Pleiku, so don't unpack. I found out that I was going to a helicopter unit instead of the fixed wing. And once I arrived, there was a Colonel Waters. He said, let's go and check you out for instruments in the chopper. So we went up for about an hour, hour and a half flight. We did some instrument work, and he came back and signed me off both as a qualified pilot and an instrument rated pilot.
How much time had you had in helicopters at that point?
Well, let me think. I had had flight school. of 3 months. So at that particular time, I probably had maybe 100 hours or so. Not very many, because I had been sent over to Permessons, Germany from France, because they wanted all fixed-wing pilots cross-trained in the helicopters. And I was one of the first few that went from France to Permessons, Germany to be checked out. So I was checked out in the helicopters there. I don't even think I'd been in a helicopter after flight school. Time in chopper, flight school time.
And this was going to be very different from flight school, because you were going to have a lot of people's lives in your hands piloting that helicopter.
Yes, and I did a lot of different things flying that helicopter. Well, my unit, when I first joined my unit was, okay, I'm going to say it anyway. My unit was called an ash and trash unit. Mm-hmm. In other words, we hauled whatever, wherever, whatever. We were a combat assault helicopter company, but we had a lot to do with VIPs, like some of the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders came over, and we flew them around on handshake tours. One of my greatest thing was, you ever heard of Martha Raye, the movie star?
Very famous for her support of the troops during this era.
Very famous. She was my favorite of all movie stars. I got to fly her. I got to live in the same billets with her. I had two helicopters assigned to me in a little place called Bamituit. Bamituit is a place where our famous Roosevelt would go on safaris. We stayed in the same billeting area that he stayed in whenever he was there. I flew her into hot zones where people like Bob Hope and other entertainers would not even dare go. She loved the Special Forces. She called the Special Forces her boys. Whenever I went to her home after I came back out of Vietnam, I went to her home, and her whole, she had one room, nothing but Special Forces stuff. Right in the middle of that room, she had her, what's that gold statue? Oscar. She had her Oscar right in the middle of that room on a special table. She had lost one of her legs at that time, and she was in a hospital bed. She and I had a lot of one-to-one talk and memories about Vietnam. There was one time I flew her into a hot zone. She put on a smock and helped the corpsman take care of the wounded as they came in. When I picked her up and took her back to Bamituit, we were having dinner that night, and she says, John, you know what I didn't like about today? And I said, Maggie, from what I hear, you have nothing not to like or to be ashamed of what you did today. She says, when I went back and finished my show, I forgot to take off that bloody damn smock. And I laughed at her, and I said, Maggie, don't worry about that. Because she had told me to call her Maggie, because I was start out calling her Colonel Raye. And she said, Captain, do you want to be my friend? And I said, if I'm going to be your pilot, yes, I'd like to be your friend. She said, then my name is Maggie. So from that point on, I called her Maggie. And she told me, she says, I don't know how you do it, John. I said, do what? She says, you fly in and out of all this. You pick up all these wounded and dead and everything. You have your helicopter shot up with holes. How do you do that? And you don't drink. You don't smoke. You don't even drink coffee. I said, well, Maggie, at one time I did drink, but I found out that I didn't need it. Let me ask you a question, Maggie. The way I fly you and the places I fly you, would you rather for me to be flying you with a hangover or with a clear head? And she says, looking at it that way, a clear head. So I said, well, that's another reason that I don't drink. When she came home, she called Sandy, invited Sandy up to her home, and everything. And because Sandy was staying in El Cajon, California, while I was in Vietnam.
She called Sandy to tell her what a great guy you were, or what?
Yes, that, not only that, and that she called her and told her that she had just, well, the funny part was when she called and got Sandy on the phone, she says, "This is Maggie." Sandy says, "Maggie? I don't know any Maggie." She says, "Martha Ray, the big mouth." And she said, "Oh, oh my." And Sandy was pregnant with our last daughter at the time. She says, "Now don't drop the bread out of the wagon or out of the basket." And so they talked for a while, and then she told Sandy that she had just left me and that I was just okay and doing fine, not to worry about me, that I had, that she had spent a lot of time with me, and that I was fine with a pretty level head and everything, and that she was almost positive that she would see me again. And she says, "And when he gets back, I want you to come up to Hollywood here to see us." So Sandy wrote me and told me about Martha Ray calling her and everything, and it made my day when they did that.
But when the entertainer Martha Ray told John's wife Sandy that she was almost positive she would get to see her husband again, nobody knew what else John Hosey would have to survive in Vietnam, including an incident that earned him the Silver Star, not to mention the second of his 3 Purple Hearts. In order to do that story justice, we're going to have to finish our conversation with Mr. Hosey on our next episode so we can really grasp the significance of what happened that day, not to mention the story later of his 3rd Purple Heart. For 29 years, he served our country in uniform, but I don't think you'd be surprised to hear that his spirit of service has found several other avenues as well. So thanks for spending this hour with us today, and don't miss the rest of Mr. Hosey's story on the next episode of Hometown Heroes. You can bet you will leave as convinced as ever that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.